Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Gotta get the door. Just gotta shut the door there, sorry about that. I'm having a difficult afternoon, folks. It's been a difficult afternoon. I had my guest for this week's show lined up. I'm taking you behind the scenes here. I could just not say anything and present this as like a seamless professional piece of work a bit later on, but I don't think I'm going to do that. We need to see behind the scenes, behind the curtain, the whole Wizard of Oz thing, how podcasting really happens. No, I don't think anybody really needs to see that. I just feel like complaining a little bit. It's going to be one of those shows, I guess. Some days, some weeks, it all goes perfectly smoothly. You sit down, everything just works out. The guest is there. They say good things. You don't have to do any editing. And then, you know, the whole rest of it just comes together. Everything is seamless and perfect and wonderful and brilliant. And, well, I mean, I assume it is. I'm just saying from a process point of view, I'm not necessarily saying that about the content of the podcast. That can be flaky. That can change. There's the dog now, barking. See what I mean? Front door going. It's one of those days. Anyway, you know what happened? You know who I'm blaming for my troubles this afternoon? Microsoft. That's right, Microsoft. I don't have any Microsoft products. I do not use a Microsoft-based computer. I'm not using Windows XP or Windows 90, whatever it is now. I'm guessing it's Windows 16. No? Or whatever, Windows whatever. I'm not using that. I'm not using any Microsoft products, apart from, of course, Skype. Skype, generally speaking, is how you would connect to a guest. You would Skype them on their Skype, or you can use Skype to call them on the phone. You know, if we're not using the more high-tech options, because there's not much point, because ultimately, you're at the mercy of whatever the person at the other end has to talk into. So if they've only got a telephone, there's not much point in doing the old high-tech stuff that myself and James use, because he's got a really good microphone at his end, and that's why it sounds good. But Skype was down. Skype was out. It was missing. It was like the Arsenal defense against Everton on Tuesday night. It was dysfunctional. It was misfiring. It was unable to stop an Ashley Williams-sized gremlin get into their system and win it late on. So by the time we'd figured that out, my guest had to go to work, and now I don't quite know what to do. He may be able to pop back in later on. I hope he is able to, because that would save me the hassle of looking around for somebody else. What do I do, though? It's now 10 to 4 in the afternoon. What do I do? Do I start looking around now for an alternative guest? It's a bit late. 10 to 4 on a Thursday afternoon. I mean, I could send a few DMs, send a few emails, that kind of stuff. Or I could just lazily sit here until he said he might be available around 8 or 9 o'clock. I could do that. That's a bit like living on the edge, though, isn't it? Because what if he's not? What if he isn't able to do it at 8 or 9 o'clock? Then I'm in a complete hole. I'm fucked. You'll just have to put up with me talking for, I don't know, half an hour, 25 minutes. What would I even talk about for that long? Could talk about how podcast is fucked. Yeah. That would be a great podcast, just talking about how bad the podcast is. Oh, man. It's one of those afternoons. What can you do, though? Just got to get on with it. Bit like Arsenal. Yeah. Nice segue there, isn't it? No, it wasn't. It was terrible. But we do have to just get on with it, don't we? After what was a disappointing night at Goodison Park. Started pretty well. We played pretty well. Passed it around pretty well. Scored. Not the greatest goal you'll ever see for From an Arsenal point of view, Alexis Sanchez took the free kick. It hit Ashley Williams' legs, went between them, in fact. The keeper stuck a hand out, got a hand to it. The ball went over the line all the same. So it was like all the things that take goodness away from a goal were there. So a deflection and a goalkeeper getting a hand on it, and not the greatest shot in the first place. But look, you know, we don't mind that. You don't really care what way they go in. Once they go in, there are no points for artistic impression. I'm not here to cast aspersions on the aesthetics of Arsenal goals. Once they go in, I'm just pretty much all right with it. But the fact that was the only one we could make go in, that was our downfall. That was the problem. Everton got better as the game went on. Well, certainly as the second half went on, they got better. They upped their intensity and we didn't. I won't say necessarily sat back. I thought Everton deserve a bit of credit for the way that they responded. We don't deserve very much credit for the way we defended. I thought Theo Walcott could probably have done a bit more to stop that Leighton Baines cross. And obviously, letting somebody have a free header from just in front of the goal, that's not ideal. I'm pretty sure that's right up there in the manual of things you shouldn't do in a game of football that you're trying to win. And then we started better again in the second half, I thought, and should have gone ahead. Mesut Ozil, what did he do? How did he? Why? Come on. A guy of his quality and ability and goal-scoring form this season, set up by Alexis Sanchez. Coquelin had sent a very nice pass through to Alexis Sanchez. Sanchez pulled it back for Ozil, and he should have hit the target. He should have put it in the back of the net. Instead, he put it over and into the stand, and that was disappointing. And on a night when we weren't really creating a great deal, where we weren't necessarily clicking as an attacking force, it always felt like that could be a bit of a costly miss. Again, Everton upped their intensity. They did more. We tried to change it. We brought on Iwobi and Giroud for Walcott and Oxlade-Chamberlain, who hadn't really done a great deal. It didn't work. And then they got their winner. Corner that shouldn't have been a corner. We cleared that one. Then there was another corner, and they headed that in. And I thought we should have had a penalty, though. I stand by that. Having seen it in real time, having seen it on replays, and having seen the old reverse angle, I still pretty much insist that's a penalty. Which, of course, as I keep saying, and I've had to say a number of times this week, that pointing out that we should have had a penalty is not making an excuse for the way that we played or the way that we defended. But games, generally speaking, in the Premier League are decided on very, very fine margins. Like, if Tottenham didn't get the penalty they should have had against Arsenal, we would have won that game 1-0. And we should have had a penalty against Everton. And I guess maybe on the night in question you could be fatalistic and say, we were never going to score it. But I think, you know, Olivier Giroud is a good penalty taker. I think he probably would have scored. 2-2, not ideal, not great, not what we were looking for, but certainly not as bad as losing, and losing our unbeaten run, which of course stretched back to the opening day of the season. So not really a good week in that sense from a footballing point of view. And of course, everybody else won. The next night we were playing on Tuesday, and on Wednesday, Chelsea won, Manchester United won, Tottenham won, Liverpool won. Who are the other cunts? Manchester City won. They all won, and we didn't. We're very much the odd one out this week, and it's changed the mood. It's changed the perception of the way our season is going, that everyone this time last week was feeling pretty good, pretty confident, and now after one bad result, it's like, no, not this again. It's happening again. It might be happening again, but, you know, it also might not. That's the thing. We don't know. That's the beauty of sport. It could be different. Like, you know, significantly. Or it could be exactly. I don't know. I'm not a future teller. I'm not a soothsaying guy. I suppose those of a more glass half empty outlook will say, well, look, this is just what happens. We've been here before. And if you can't see what's happening, then, you know, you're mad. And those with a glass half full will say, you know, you can't always make predictions on the future based on what happens in the past. Things can change. Things can be different. And I think I'd be a little more inclined to go with that point of view, that things could be a little bit different, because we've seen that things are a bit different this season. The football is better. We're a bit more secure. We're a bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. See? terrible day, difficult day. What I'm trying to say is that that we've shown a bit more character and a bit more gumption. There's a good word when you can't think of a word and then all of a sudden gumption pops up. That's a good word. And we've shown a bit more of that. But of course, we look to Sunday and think, well, this will be the test. This will be a test of how we can respond. When you have a disappointing result and you're playing somebody like, I don't know, a team in the bottom half of the table, then you can be relatively confident that you're going to respond, you're going to react in a positive way. But when you lose an unbeaten run and your next game is away at Manchester City, as difficult and all as their season has been and as tough as they've found it in recent weeks, it's still not the greatest place in the world to go. Away from home, our record there is not particularly good. So, this will be a real test, and it'll be a real test of the quality of this side and how quickly can they respond to a setback? How soon can they get themselves back on their feet after a disappointing result? I don't know. We'll see. We'll find out. But you know what we should do? We should talk about this with this week's guest, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show... Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's nobody... Right now, nobody can't do it. Oh, what the hell am I gonna? What am I gonna do here? You know what I'll do? Is I will wait 4 hours to see if they can do it or not. And if they can, brilliant. And if they can't, then I'll go into full-on emergency mode. So while you're waiting, here's 4 hours of intermission music.
Good evening.
Let's start with Everton then. Arsenal have lost twice in the league this season, twice to clubs from Merseyside, once at home and once away. I think when you looked at the fixtures that we have coming up, particularly the one on Sunday against Manchester City, you would have thought if we were going to slip up, it was going to be against Manchester City, but it was Everton and a disappointing result after going ahead. We just seemed to let it slip a bit.
Yeah, it caught me by surprise. Especially having gone 1-0 up, I thought we started quite well. And then there's always, obviously, you're always nervous about not getting the first goal. And then when we did, with the naivety that we all have, which we really shouldn't do after watching football and watching this club for so long, I relaxed. I did the same as the players. And... I kind of assumed it would all be fine from there because Everton are, let's be honest, not a very good team. They've been terrible recently, and I thought we were actually playing fairly well up until that point. I'm often quite reluctant to put poor results, to put disappointments down to psychological factors. I think it's just, or maybe that's the wrong word, but it's very easy to kind of say the players didn't get stuck in, they didn't, you know, they let themselves down, they let us down, and this kind of thing. You could apply that to nearly anything, and often it lets the manager off the hook, who ultimately is responsible for picking a team that works. And usually when we have disappointments, it's because, I think, because of strategy and the team that's picked the direction they're going in. I have one big complaint from the game in that perspective, which is how we played towards the end and the players that came on and there were some wrong decisions there.
But, will you expand on that for me a little bit, please? I mean, you mean like the team that he picked was more or less the same one that beat Stoke at home.
Yeah.
Is it a case that, for example, you can't play Walcott and Oxlade-Chamberlain away from home. If you think back, there was a time, I think Arsene Wenger was a little bit reluctant to use Robert Pires and Freddie Ljungberg away from home. He went for perhaps something a little more solid. And then, are you referring to the substitutions that he made?
More on the substitutions. I think I would prefer Iwobi to have started on the left. I think that would have made more sense with the starting 11. But ultimately, I don't have a problem with the starting 11. I think it totally made sense. And they showed that they were entirely capable of dominating the game with those players on the pitch and going on to win it comfortably. I mean, there are always ifs, but if Ozil puts either of his chances away, then we're 2-0 up, and I think we'd have gone on to win comfortably. The issue is towards the end of the game, I think we have two ways of playing. We have the very quick, on your toes, sort of occasionally high pressing, high tempo game, which involves the quick players having Walcott as an outlet, being able to play quick balls up through Ozil to Sanchez, that kind of game. And then, of course, we do have the plan B that we've seen in getting the ball wide, crossing it into Giroud, when on the sort of relatively few occasions he's played, or when he's started, I mean, but when he's come off the bench. I think we ended up in the towards the end of the game with, and I'm not, of course, just meaning the frantic final 3 minutes after they'd got, after they'd got their second, but the last, I can't remember what it was, last 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
We ended up, I thought, with a complete muddle of the two. It was bizarre because Everton were pushing for, there was a point where they were pushing forward, and I never understand why we have Giroud in that situation where there are opportunities for counter-attacks, and we slow the whole team down by bringing on the slowest forward that we have to lead the line, but equally the Sanchez stayed on. Sanchez and Giroud don't work, never have done. Iwobi was doing everything he does, having, clever build-up play, everything, but not doing what, beating his man and swinging in crosses to Giroud, which is what's worked in previous games when we've had Chamberlain and Giroud come on at the same time, and then you do that. And there was notable confusion in the side about how we were going to get what was originally the winner, which was so badly needed.
Yeah.
So there was that disappointment. But I have to say, I'm not, for this game, I think there was a psychological problem. I think we just didn't. It's difficult winning the league. It's difficult having that intensity every game. And I thought we had it against Stoke, and that was really, really reassuring. And it was disappointing to have, I'd say, about a half an hour period in the middle of the match where we really lacked that.
Do you think it was, how much was it down to Arsenal relaxing after the first goal going in, and Everton, it all, when you think back on the game, maybe at the time it's not so obvious, but when you think back on the game, it's almost as if Everton played that way deliberately at first, and then up the intensity towards the end of the half. Now, maybe our friend Orbino on Twitter can point us in the right direction here, but I seem to recall him posting, whether it was this season or last season, that we had a tendency to concede in the last 15 minutes before halftime. That was something that we were doing quite a lot of. So maybe there was an element of that. But, I mean, was it to do with Arsenal becoming casual, not going for the second goal that would have perhaps, changed the trajectory of the game or even killed the game to a certain extent? We were very much on top. But also Everton really, really stepped it up as well, that they didn't give us, all of a sudden, they weren't giving us the time on the ball that we were enjoying.
I mean, I think you always blame your own team, don't you? And that's what I am finding myself leaning towards. Like Everton, well, I think one thing that's been forgotten is because the way the game ended with everything going in their favour and the whole, the ground being everyone on their feet and it being sort of, very high energy. It's how low on energy Goodison was earlier in the game. The atmosphere was dead earlier on, and they were terrible. They were really, really bad. And we absolutely had a chance to stifle them and really demoralize them and stamp our authority and come away with 3 points. And I think we gradually let them back in, like bit by bit. And there is something to be said. You're right. They did step it up. They started to win the ball back, which they just weren't at the start of the game. But I don't know. I mean, I hadn't really thought about that. But in previous seasons, we have had points where we've struggled with teams just closing us down a bit, having a period of intensity and getting on us, and strangely, given that we have this reputation as a passing team, not being able to keep the ball in those situations. So I think that is a little bit worrying, but that comes down partly to concentration, and I think that it is one of those situations where we did stop concentrating as much as we need to, and we lost that intensity and we lost that determination to get a second goal and make it really count.
I mean, we did have the chance, obviously, with Mesut Ozil in the second half to get ourselves back in front. And when you talk about concentration, you talk about lapses. It is these really small things, these fine margins that can determine games. There have been games this season where the opposition have missed reasonable chances to score goals, and it's worked in our favour. Everton didn't miss those chances the other night. Seamus Coleman scored just before halftime. The goal that we conceded right at the death, or in the last few minutes from Ashley Williams. You can look at both of those goals and see that with a bit more, I don't want to put it on an intangible effort, but I think concentration is probably the right way to put it, that with a bit more concentration, a bit more organisation, don't leave Mesut Ozil, for example, being the guy who has to compete with Ashley Williams from a corner. Those kind of things can make a big difference, and we didn't master those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. We've had our defence hasn't been as sterling as we sometimes think this year, and we do.
Yeah.
We've had points where we clearly have got away with the opposition missing chances, and absolutely. This was a wake up call in that respect. I mean, as I say again, a disappointing thing is that there has been this question over the team's mental strength, if I can say that without sounding like I'm taking a piss, in recent times. Wenger teams often, as we know, he has a laissez-faire approach and sometimes don't take the game by the scruff of the neck in a way that we'd like to see. I thought that again on the weekend is why there was a very positive feeling after the game on Saturday, which wasn't that easy. I mean, Stoke and Mark Hughes both have terrible records, neither have won at our ground since we moved there. But for me, that was one of the least bad Stoke Mark Hughes performances at our place. They had something about them. They had a plan, and it wasn't that easy. And I mean, I'm being boring. I just agree with what you say. It's those little things that turn the game, and the equaliser on the weekend. That kind of level of focus and concentration brought us that goal, and then the second and the third, and it was just small things that changed the game against Everton. And it is disappointing because you can really see how with that slight, with the psychological level just turned up a little bit, it wouldn't have even taken that much. It would have just taken a little bit of an improvement. We needed 3 points from it rather than one, let alone zero.
Yeah.
And that's what should have happened.
How do you view the defeat then in the overall context of the season? Because immediately afterwards, a lot of people were saying, well, here we go. This is what happens. You know, we lose a game like this where, you know, we're expected to win. We had the chance to go back to the top of the table, albeit temporarily. And now, with what's happened with Chelsea, we're 6 points behind. We lose to Manchester City. We could be 9 points behind, which of course is true. It is worst case scenario kind of stuff. But, you know, in terms of the bigger picture, is there more to learn from Arsenal's 14-game unbeaten run or from what we saw on Tuesday at Goodison Park?
I think it's... I'm going to try to be positive and say the former. I'm trying to look at this kind of a bit more philosophically. I always think in terms of, obviously, the league is across 38 games and is a measure of your average performances across those 38 games. So whenever, I mean, drawing at home to Borough was a big disappointment. The way I saw it, we were a little bit unlucky that game, but we'd been quite lucky in games before that to turn draws into wins. So that those are the times when, you know, it's very easy to pick games out of a season and teams that persistently fail will always do this and say, well, if we'd have just won that and won that, then we'd have finished above our local rivals for the first time in 20 years, for example. And of course that's not how it works.
Yeah, yeah.
Any team, including the winners, can go back and pick their four or five most disappointing games. The question is whether you end up on three defeats, four defeats, or seven or eight, and of course the same going for drop points when you draw games. And I would, we are very early in the season, and we've got a lot of games, of course, coming up in a short period of time. And I think the squad this season, what makes me more positive is that the squad, I think, is in a lot better position than it's been for a very long time. I don't think the manager is still that great at rotating the squad, but frankly, which manager is rotating well in England at the moment? Guardiola, I'm sure we'll come on to this in a minute, is really struggling to rotate. I actually thought Pellegrini was very good at managing his squad, and so far we haven't seen Guardiola do that as well, I don't think. And we're quite, you know, we've got some injuries, sure, but most of them are players coming back fairly soon. And I think there is a, you know, we're quite well balanced. So I think if the team can respond from the Everton game, then we're still in a very strong position. And that's when you start to think, we look back in February and you turn that negative into a positive and think, well, we've been on that great run.
Yeah.
We messed up at Goodison and then we put on another run. So there's no, I don't see, what I suppose I'm getting at is I don't see any fundamental reason why we can't go on another run. I don't see any reason in terms of injuries. I don't see any reason in terms of tactics, who we've got, the players that we have. I don't see a big gaping hole in the squad necessarily. I'm not desperate for us to sign someone in January, which is good because we probably won't. And it's very much, you know, looking forward now in terms of
sure.
in terms of how we respond in these games.
Yeah, and it's I think you're right in the sense that it's more to do with managing the players that he has in a way that brings out the best in them. Because, you know, you look at what happened against Stoke and the way that we played. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain got an assist. Theo Walcott scored against Stoke, didn't he?
Am I right? Yeah, the first equalising. Yeah.
So Theo scored. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain gets an assist. And you can sort of see the rationale in keeping them in the team for the next game. And I think that's been part of perhaps what has made us more effective this season when, you know, Alexis, he hasn't always scored. He's scored obviously pretty often and Ozil has scored pretty often. But we've had the wide players chipping in. Like Walcott, Oxlade-Chamberlain, they've been chipping in with a reasonable amount of goals. But they didn't chip in. They couldn't contribute the other night. And I think that's what did us in. And perhaps there is a need just for a little bit more in terms of rotation in those wide areas, because there are players like Iwobi, like Lucas Perez, for example, who could come in and just sort of remind people that they do have to really stay on their toes, you know, if they want to keep their place. But you spoke about Guardiola. He's finding it quite difficult, isn't he, to come to terms with a league where it's A, very competitive, and B, he is a long way from being the manager of the best team or the best squad with the best players.
I think Man City's first 11, if there's such a thing, is incredible. I think it's the best in the division. The depth of the squad for such a wealthy club, I don't think is that strong, actually. And I think this is what he's struggling with. You could say anyone would do well with De Bruyne, Aguero, Sterling, etc. But it did click at the beginning of the season that they were great. It all looked good. It's not been so strong in recent times when he's had to rotate. And if there's a positive going into the game on Sunday, they don't have Gundogan, they don't have Fernandinho, who I think is really important to them.
Yeah.
Possibly, you know, the hardest player for them to replace in the way that he's been trying to play this season. And then, of course, Aguero as well up front. That does give us a big opportunity. It's going to be fascinating over the course of the season and presumably next season, and I suppose you'd even say the season after that, how he gets on. When he went there, I thought it's not as big a challenge as people are making out. I mean, they've just got an exceptional amount of money and a hugely talented squad. But he is certainly at the moment struggling with... I think it's simply just bringing him who shouldn't be at a club that rich. Mm. One of whom used to play for us, certainly, and then Fernando in midfield as well.
I mean, are you then pretty, I won't say pretty confident, but confident that we can put this Everton thing to one side and go to Manchester City? I know we won there a couple of seasons ago, but generally our record there, you know, it's not terrible, but it's not great either. Are you relatively confident that these players have the ability to completely compartmentalize what happened on Tuesday night? I know they went out for their Christmas drinks during the week, so, you know, they've had a good night out, they've had a day off, they've got to come back, get back to work. I think one of the things we've seen in the past with Arsenal sides is that when we have come to the end of a pretty decent run, it sort of knocks us off track just a little bit. And it takes us a little while longer to get back on it. And Arsene Wenger has spoken about the need for or the maturity in this side and the experience in this side. I mean, we have to see that come to the fore then on Tuesday, or on Sunday rather.
You're right. I mean, it's strange because I used to, I mean, there was a time under Wenger when I used to almost not enjoy the defeat, but enjoy the period after the defeat almost immediately, because you could tell how much it anchored the team in a positive way, in a way that would drive them on to better things and to be less complacent in the coming games. The defeat to Newcastle in, what was it, 2001, December 2001, when we then went on to win the double, I think is a famous one. And there are a few others like that. Whereas in recent years, we have had this an enormous demoralising effect that a defeat can have. Although the same thing did, of course, happen to the Invincibles after the 49th game as well.
So, yeah.
I mean, I suppose the point what I'm trying to say is, they need, I suppose, one way of seeing it psychologically is that they can put it behind them and move on. But I mean, I'd like to see a bit of arrogance as well, and a bit of anger, therefore, from what happened. I mean, I'd like to see Mesut Ozil. I'd like to think it really grates that he's just lost 3 points to a bunch of people who, some of whom, shouldn't even be allowed on the same pitch as him. I'd like to see him thinking that way. Thinking, I mean, he is better than basically their entire team. And I'd like to see some of that coming out. Like, and of course, that needs to be channeled in the right way. And of course, we're never going to see Mesut Ozil rolling up his sleeves, storming 50 yards and going studs in on someone. And we don't want to, because that's...
I might actually want to see that just for the laugh.
I don't know. I mean, I think when Ozil focuses and really works hard, which he does in lots of games, he does it in a way which is very calculated and understated, but which is also noticeable if one looks out for it. And I'd like to see that. I'd like to see him saying, well, you know what? No, I'm not going to jump for a corner and elbow someone in the face, because it's not what I am. But I am actually going to go to Man City and I'm going to dominate this game. To answer your question of whether I'm optimistic or not, I mean, I'll say I am. I mean, I think we have a team capable of winning up there, and we've seen a lot of positive things from this team in the games before Goodison Park. I think we can put on a run. I think the games over Christmas and New Year, of course, are very winnable, should be 3 points from those. And it is a really interesting test. Is how we get on in these fixtures.
Yeah, agree. All right. Well, look, we'll leave it there. Let's hope that Mesut Ozil can do that domination of the game, and then when it's won, I'd like to see the studs up thing, and he can have a rest. Julian, thanks a million.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed to Julian H from Gingers for Limpar. You can find him on Twitter at Gingers for Limpar, where the four is a number four. So that's at Gingers for Limpar.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, let's talk a little bit about FanDuel, which is one-day fantasy football. No commitments over the whole season, waiting until May to see if you've won something. We all know what that feels like, right? You just pick a team for this weekend, and if your team does well enough, you can win some real money. That's right. Loads of competitions to enter. You can deposit some money in your account. You can play for free as well. But if you deposit money, you can obviously play for the bigger money. And this week, FanDuel are offering you deposit £10, play with £30. So that means you sign up today, make a deposit of £10, and FanDuel will give you an extra £20 free to play with. That means they'll give you £5 every week for 4 weeks. It's the perfect chance to prove your managerial prowess and win big. That's right. Use the promo code ArsBlog30 when you're signing up to claim that particular offer. So you put a tenner in, they give you a fiver a week for the next 4 weeks, and you can enter the competitions. I've entered a team. If I win any money, it will go to some kind of charity. The charity should be like how bad I am at fantasy football. Nevertheless, my team is Fabianski, Font, David Luiz, Wes Morgan, Antonio Mares, Lalana, and Nordveit, and up front, Diego Costa. Sorry. I can't bring myself to pick Tottenham players or anything, but just Diego Costa. Shane Long and Jamie Vardy. So we'll see if that team is good enough to do anything. If it is, I will throw the money in the direction of a very worthy cause. If you want to sign up, go to fanduel.co.uk. That's fanduel.co.uk. Use the promo code ArsBlog30 to sign up and get that special offer where they give you £20 worth of credit to play with. You can also get their apps on iOS and Android. So search the Play Store and the App Store and just seek out, or search, indeed, search is the better term, isn't it? Seek out suggests that you'd actually enter the store and walk around. But no, just search for FanDuel and use the promo code ArsBlog30 when you sign up. Now, I just wanted to share a comment that we got on ArsBlog News the other day. It was on the day of Santi Cazorla's birthday. And a fellow who decided the best username that he could think of was Nasri wanted to leave some greetings for Santi Not that he would see them, of course, buried deep in the comment section on Arsblog News. But he left this comment all the same. I guess his heart was in the right place. What he said was, "Hap Bathday, St. Carzor." Hap Bathday, St. Carzor. I know English isn't everybody's first language or anything, but I like it. I like it. It's just stuck with me all week. I didn't approve this comment or publish it on the website because, we sort of have standards about spelling and grammar and all those kind of things. But it's just been, I haven't been able to get it out of my head. I haven't been able to delete it. I'm going to leave it in the back end of Arsblog News forever. Hap Bathday, St. Carzor. And of course, St. Carzor, he's out of action. We don't have him at this moment in time. St. Carzor has had an operation on his Achilles and he will not be in the team to face Manchester City on Sunday. We won there a couple of years ago and I'm not saying it was all to do with him, but St. Carzor had probably one of the best games he's ever had in an Arsenal shirt that day. It was one of those games, I think it was one of the first times that he was moved deep in the midfield alongside Francis Coquelin, and he was just unbelievably good that day. You think about the game on Sunday, you think about what we need to do, about who we're playing against, and you do think it might be easier. It's not going to be easy, but easier if we had St. Carzor. If we had Carzor and Xhaka or Carzor and Coquelin in the midfield, I think we'd be just a little bit more secure in possession when we have it. Just have that, just that little bit of extra craft. Because this is going to be a hell of a game on Sunday. It's going to be so difficult. So difficult. I mean, they're playing really poorly. Sadly, they've dropped John Stones. He hasn't been playing particularly well at all since his £50 million move. £50 million? Wow. When you think about the money Manchester City have spent on central defenders... Now, Stones is obviously a real prospect. I think he's a good footballer, but he's really struggling to come to terms with what Pep Guardiola wants from him. None of this tackling bullshit or, you know. He wants him to play the ball in dangerous areas, which is something Stones likes to do, but I don't know. They spent a lot of money on central defenders. I don't know what my point is there. Oh, I was just going to say, when you think of the slings and arrows sent the way of lesser purchases like Otamendi, which isn't to say Otamendi is a great player, or Mangala, who was 40-odd million pounds, wasn't he? So, I mean, he got it right in the neck. Stones has got that little bit of English protection going on, and maybe they're taking him out of the team, but, you know, he's been playing so poorly. The idea of Stones trying to deal with Alexis Sanchez, that would have been exciting. I would have liked to see that. I wouldn't, you know, want the young guy to have one of those nights where his career is completely and utterly ruined or anything. No, I'm not that kind of guy. Although when you think about it, what if he grows up to be like another John Terry? The whole nits make lice kind of thing. Take him out while they're young and they don't grow into the thing that you hate the most. He doesn't strike me necessarily as that type. But you never know, do you? I mean... just can't tell what lurks under the surface of man. But look, the point is that Manchester City are not very good defensively at this moment in time. I don't think we are particularly good defensively either, but I don't think we've been as bad as they've been. Pep is finding it a bit more difficult to impose his way of football on a league where, A, you don't have Lionel Messi, or B, you're not this gigantic behemoth club that as soon as another club produces a good player, you go out and buy them just so you can weaken that club the way that the Bayern Munich did. He's finding it more difficult because the Premier League is a bit more difficult, a bit more competitive. There are more teams who can do damage to you and more teams who can hurt you, and Premier League teams won't allow you to play the kind of football that Pep Guardiola likes to play. Not when you don't have the players to play it in particular. That's the key thing. I think Pep Guardiola's football works when you've got really, really good players. He just doesn't quite have as many of them as he needs to make that system work. But defensively suspect. Even with the win in midweek, I think they are defensively suspect. Goalkeeper suspect. And you would hope that what happened in midweek with us against Everton was a bit of an aberration. One of those nights where because we haven't been great defensively, because we haven't kept a clean sheet in 11 games, when you don't score the goals, you can get punished. And I think that's kind of what happened. And Alexis and Ozil didn't really click the other night. They didn't get the support from the likes of Oxlade-Chamberlain and Walcott, the guys who've been there this season, you know, to pick up the slack a little bit. You know, they've been contributing and making a contribution to good results. When he brought on Iwobi and Giroud, neither of them could really get into the game. So he didn't work as an attacking force against Everton on Tuesday night. But you've got to hope that we can, you know, find our groove again very quickly, respond quickly and play the kind of football that we have seen from this team this season. And if we do, I think we've got a really good chance to bounce back against City. It's whether or not this team has got the mental capacity to do that. Sometimes when Arsenal come to the end of an unbeaten run, we feel inhibited, or we take our time to get going again, and it can be a case that you get one or two more disappointing results. And I hope that's not the case, because if, you know, to win the title, to be really challenging for the title, we can't allow that to happen. We've got to bounce back really quickly. And I do wonder perhaps if a little bit of rotation for this weekend might be in order. Bring back Alex Iwobi into the starting lineup, perhaps. Try something a little bit different if you're playing Alexis there. Give Lucas Perez a go on the right-hand side, maybe. And then you've got your options on the bench. You've got Walcott. You've got Oxlade-Chamberlain. You've got Giroud. See if they can come on this time and make a bit of a difference. I'd like to just see a little bit of a tweak in the team, just to give it a bit of freshness, some fresh legs, and, you know, give some guys a chance. You know, most of the guys have contributed this season. But when you don't, we've got other players who can and should be given a chance to do that. So I hope that's the case. And then, of course, that is our last game before Christmas. So basically, Arsenal, you have the power to make everyone's Christmas good or terrible. And hopefully they can make it a really good one. I don't know what else to say about this game. I'm hopeful, but nervous, but I don't know. You just don't know, do you? Is it happening again like it has in other seasons? I don't know. It's a real beard scratcher. Yeah. Scratching my beard to that one. But look, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that it does work, that we can get a good result. A win would be brilliant. I don't think a draw is necessarily a bad result, given the opposition, given the location. But obviously, depending on what other teams do, it could become very costly. I think bouncing back and getting a win would answer some of the questions that the people still have about the team. Some of the questions they've answered, some of them they haven't. And this will be a good chance to do that. So I'm just going to keep everything, fingers, toes, organs, whatever. Everything I can cross, I'm going to cross. Roads, fields, great blue yonders. I don't know, everything. Everything. We don't play till Sunday till 4 o'clock, so lots will happen before we play that game. Adding a little bit of pressure or not, we'll wait and see. James and I will be here on the Arsecast Extra on Monday to discuss it all. And I think because Christmas is what? It's a Sunday? It's next Sunday. So there's no reason not to do an Arsecast next Friday either. So we might have a festive Arsecast, fingers crossed. We've got reason to celebrate. So we'll do that. We'll catch you on the next one. Have a great weekend. Thank you, as ever, for listening. It's really appreciated. Say a little prayer for St. Carzor. Until the next one, cheers. Bye-bye.
Join us as we take another enchanting adventure into the world of the angriest man on Twitter.
Hello, my son.
Hello, father. It has been 19 years since my last confession.
God does not worry about how long it is you've been away. Only know that you have returned to his flock. What is it that you'd like to confess to?
Well, I've been stealing stationery from work.
I see.
I've also coveted my neighbour's goods.
Right.
And I have to admit I've coveted his wife a number of times when he's been away on business.
Well, those are indeed against God's commandments.
I have not respected my own wife. She says that I have anger issues, Father.
And do you, son, do you have issues with anger?
Generally speaking, no. But when I'm on Twitter and there's a football game on, I can feel like my temperature is rising. Yeah, well, you can see.
Look, many of us indeed struggle with the pressures of life, and it can make us angry. Once you don't lash out indiscriminately, then it's something that you can come to terms with.
But I do lash out, Father.
You do?
Yes, indeed, I do. Just this week, in fact, I lashed out at a 20-year-old Arsenal player who hasn't yet played 50 games for the club and is still learning his trade as a professional footballer. But in the last minute of a game against Everton, he had a glorious chance to score a goal and he missed, so I told him he was a wanker over and over and over again, Father!
Right, well, I have to say that for all my years of hearing confessions and hearing people's sins, I'm taken aback, I'm afraid. There's just nothing I can do for you, nor the Lord.
What? What is that then?
Well, basically, anybody who would spend their time directing abuse at a young footballer who's trying his best, there's no place in heaven for you. And the Lord, to his credit, has made an agreement with your man downstairs. He gets every single one of you. You're going to burn like a complete bastard. It's going to hurt like crazy, Jesus, for eternity too. Ha! God, I'd hate to be you. I really would hate to be you. Anyway, say a couple of Hail Marys for the crack. It's not going to make any difference or anything. You're completely doomed. Oh God, you're going to fry. Oh, Jesus. Bet you wish you never set up a Twitter account now, eh?
Oh.
Next week, another madcap laugh-a-minute romp with the angriest man on Twitter.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everything is shit!